Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your letting me come, and I think you'll hear me fine. Usually my voice carries pretty well. Everybody hear me in the back? Good. Yeah, Joe, thank you for letting me share my testimony. I first got to know Joe personally in January, I think it was, and we were talking about this whole concept of apologetics for high school students in the Veritas Club. So I was thrilled when I found out he had planned this seminar and didn't know anything about it at the time when I first talked with him, but found out about it later. And it was just kind of like one of those things that God does. You know, it's amazing how God engineers things so beautifully to have me talking with him about apologetics and him planning the seminar, and together we're working on this sort of thing for high schools in the future. So I'm excited about it, about the way God works. In 1964, I enrolled in the University of Tennessee at Knoxville as an undergraduate student. When I share that with kids, I might as well say 64 BC as far as they're concerned. It's all ancient history from their perspective. 1964, good grief. But I found myself very quickly in a microbiology class taught by an arrogant, young, brash, super confident PhD student. And he loved ridiculing creationists. That was his primary thing in life, I think. He loved it. As far as he was concerned, all creationists were ignorant backwood hicks who were good for nothing but except maybe a little hilarity. He liked to laugh at and poke fun at creationists. And according to him, all real scientists were evolutionists. There were no creationists who were real scientists. And I'd been raised in Tellico Plains. And I'd gone to church in Tellico Plains, and I knew how creation happened. Genesis 1, Genesis 2, that's it. That's all I knew. Nobody ever told me there was anything different. Now, these were days before the internet, you know, long before the internet. So I didn't know there was anything else out there. I was shocked when I heard all of this. And I struggled with it for a while. And then I decided, okay, I got it fixed. I'll put that in quotes. I had a fix. And the fix was, I guess evolution must have happened because, according to this guy, all the scientists believe it. But maybe God did it. I wasn't willing to let go of God, so maybe God did it through evolution. So I called myself for a few years a theistic evolutionist. A few years later, I was a teacher at McMinn Central High School, and I was teaching a physics class there. And I had some pretty sharp students, as you might imagine, in a physics class. And they were asking questions, and some of them were kind of tuning in to this creation evolution debate, which I at the time was really not. But I thought, man, I got to have better answers than I've got. I don't have any good answers. At that time, God was working on me to build me in Christ, and He was teaching me to study the Scriptures. He was teaching me how to do word studies and how to do cross references and, you know, just how to get into the Word better than I ever had before. Bought a concordance and all these good things. Learned a little Greek, learned a little Hebrew. And there was a Christian book distributing company back then, kind of like christianbook.com. You're probably familiar with them. I don't remember what his name was, Christian Discount Warehouse or something like that. But they would send out these little catalogs like christianbook.com, little, you know, paper catalogs. And I would look through those things and try to find something to order about once a month. And one time it came, and this is when all this was going on at the school, all the controversy and questions. And there was a book in there called Evolution and Christian Faith by a man named Bolton David Heiser. Any of you ever heard of that book? Bolton David Heiser. And I thought, that sounds interesting, so I ordered it, and I got it. And when I got it, I learned Bolton David Heiser was a brilliant guy. He got his PhD from Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins is one of the leading biological sciences schools in the world. Got his PhD from Johns Hopkins, zoology, specializing in genetics. He said he'd been an evolutionist all his life. And then he said, I came to a place, he wrote this in the preface of the book, I came to the place where I could not maintain my integrity as a scientist and claim to believe evolution anymore. So he abandoned the theory, became a creationist, and got saved. And that, as you might imagine, was an awesome moment for me, because now I thought, wow, the guy at UT was wrong. There really are brilliant scientists out there who are creationists. And of course, at that point, I began to discover more of them and read more books and devoured these things. I want to share one more detail of my journey before I get to Tellico Plains. But a few years after that, I was at seminary at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, Fort Worth, Texas. I don't know if you're familiar with the history of the Southern Baptist Convention, but in those days, there weren't many conservative seminaries in the Southern Baptist Convention. We'd lost our seminaries to neo-orthodoxy, and they'd gotten pretty liberal. We were losing the faithfulness to Scripture in our seminaries. Southwestern was kind of a holdout. We had some guys there that were questionable, but a lot of the professors there were very conservative, Bible-believing guys. And that's why the conservative young men flocked to Southwestern at the time. It was the largest seminary in the convention. So I went there, and at one point I found myself in a class, a seminar, they called it, a philosophy of religion seminar. There were 13 of us in the class. And at one point the professor said, "I'm just curious, how many of you guys accept evolution?" And of the 13 in there, 10 of them raised their hands. 10 out of 13. This was the most conservative school we had. 10 of them said, "Yeah, you accept it." Three of us did not. Three of us at that point were pretty confirmed creationists. And he then asked, interestingly, "Well, how many of you have science backgrounds?" And only two of us did. I had a degree in physics, and another guy had another science degree. And we happened to be two of the three. And I thought, that's interesting. And what it said to me was that the guys, like, you know, I had kind of been forced by my physics class and wanted to get answers. The guys who had a little bit of science background may have been in situations that caused us to dig a little deeper and find out some answers. And these other guys, they didn't know any science. They hadn't studied it. What had happened? Well, they'd been kind of buffaloed by the academics, you know, just like I was at UT there for a while. They had been snowed. They had been maybe bullied a little bit into thinking, well, if you're intelligent, if you're academically minded at all, you got to believe evolution. That's all you got. So I thought that was interesting. All right, let's fast forward then and get to Tellico Plains. I was actually raised in Tellico Plains, but I moved away and was in Texas for many years and married my wife, Vicki, over there while I was in Dallas. But in 2006, 8 years ago, I'd been teaching at Tellico for 7 years at that point at the high school. I was also a sponsor of a Christian club. By the way, we have four of them at Tellico. We have one that meets on Tuesday morning, one that meets on Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, Friday morning. At the time, we only had three. But I was so burdened about the fact, and you know this, how many of our students go to school, they're faithful little churchgoers until they get through high school, and then when they get out on their own after high school, they drop out. The surveys say 70 to 80% drop out. Now, I know there are probably lots of reasons for that, but I was praying about it and burdened about it. And I thought maybe one of the reasons they drop out is related to the same thing that was going on with me in that microbiology class at UT, and the same thing that was going on in the seminary with those 10 guys. Maybe they're feeling overwhelmed. Maybe they're feeling intimidated when they get in an atmosphere where there's hostility, and some professors really are hostile to Christians. And some other students are at least, you know, they question it very severely, very strongly. And maybe these Christian kids just don't know how to answer the questions. And, you know, I'm talking about questions like, "Yeah, you believe the Bible? I mean, really? That was written hundreds of years after all these things happened. And besides that, it's full of myths and full of contradictions and errors. Surely, give me a break. You don't believe the Bible, do you?" They hear stuff like that. Or, "Jesus really rose? You think he really rose from the dead? That's a myth. You believe in the tooth fairy? You believe in the Easter bunny? I mean, what is this? How can you believe something like that?" They get that. "You believe there's a good God out there? Well, tell me this. Why is there so much bad stuff going on out there? You know how many kids are suffering in the world? How can you say there's a good God out there? There's not a God. He'd fix it if there was a good God, if he had any power." They don't know how to answer that. Or, "Don't you realize that most of the problems that have happened in the history of the world have been caused by Christians? Have you ever heard of the Inquisition? Have you ever heard of the Crusades? Have you ever heard of the witch trials?" You know, kids don't know how to answer that. Or, "How do you have the gall to tell everybody else that Jesus is the only way? I mean, after all, there are lots of good people in the world. There are sweet people. There are wonderful people. Gandhi was a great guy. And they've got different religions. They've got their way to God. You've got your way to God. How do you have the gall to tell them that they're wrong? How can you Christians be so intolerant? You're so intolerant. You're so dead-gum intolerant." And don't you realize that all the scientists accept evolution? There are no scientists who are creationists. On and on it goes, and our kids don't have the answers, and they pull into their shells, and they do a quick retreat, and they drop out of church. I think that happens to a lot of them. So in the fall of 2006, we started a club to try to help kids get answers to those questions. It was kind of a basic apologetics club for high school students. Now, I need to say this right now, very emphatically. I am not an expert in apologetics. I'm really not. I mean, these guys are going to be sharing with you this weekend. I mean, I'm not in their league. I'm really not. I don't know if any of you are familiar with J. Warner Wallace, but he talks about how we need across the country to raise up a bunch of $1 apologists. And, well, I think of myself as a 50-cent apologist. About 2 bits. But so I don't know a lot of this stuff, but I know enough, and I can learn enough, and I can study and find out enough to answer some of the kids, to help the kids get the concept, and at least to help them realize there are good answers out there. They may not, after they've been through Veritas, they may not really have all the answers locked in their brains yet. They probably don't. But they know the answers are out there. They know the answers are out there. So that's what we're trying to do. So we look at things like some of the things we're going to be looking at this weekend. Like we talked, for example, for a while about how the Bible changes lives. Because it's true, isn't it? I mean, many of you would say, well, I know the Bible's true because what God's done through His Word in my heart, in my life. He's changed my life. And I think that's very valid and very important, so we talk about that. However, I tell the kids, you know, Mormons say that about the Book of Mormon. And Muslims say that about the Quran or the Hadith, you know. I mean, you got other people talking about their holy books the same way. So we need to dig a little bit deeper. So we look at manuscript evidence, and we look at archaeological evidence, and we look at early church history, and we look at fulfilled prophecy, and we look for the evidence of the resurrection of Christ. We're going to look at that this weekend, and evidence for creation. We do a little bit of comparative religion. We compare and contrast Christianity and humanism, because there's so many kids that are adopting humanism subconsciously. They're starting to act like humanists, and they don't even realize it. And so we want them to see that. And Christianity and Islam, and Christianity and pantheism, that's Hollywood's favorite thing, I think, pantheism. We look a little bit at different people's different sources of authority for making moral decisions. What do we base our moral decisions on? We look at the moral trap. There are lots of young people that fall into a moral trap when they get out on their own, and it causes them to start doubting Scripture. You know, we look at that. We discuss, along with that, why many students leave the faith. We just talk about it. We talk about the different kinds of skeptics. We look at some of the different worldviews, attitudes about Jesus, what they say about Jesus. And then we kind of, by looking at those things, decide the only rational thing to say about Jesus is what the Bible says about Jesus. It's true, you know. So we're trying to help the kids see that. A few weeks ago, I was absent from Veritas at Teleco, and another teacher filled in for me. And he took the opportunity to ask the students who were there at the club meeting that day to write down a few things about what Veritas meant to them. And one of the students wrote these words, and I asked him if I could share them with you tonight. And he said, sure. And this is what he wrote. I'm quoting him. Veritas has had more impact on my faith than anything else these past 4 years. I've had my faith since I was young, but the training I've received in Veritas has allowed me to share my faith boldly with humanistic students that think Christians are helpless to answer certain questions. In the real world, you aren't asked, who put the animals on the ark? You're asked how the Bible's account of the flood could be supported by evidence. Sunday school devotionals are wonderful, but a serious look at serious questions is essential to being prepared to give a reason for the hope that is within us. And I don't know if you picked, isn't that good? I mean, that's a good statement. That last statement, did you pick that up? That's an allusion to 1 Peter 3:15. That's our theme verse there in our Veritas Club. So that was written by a young man who's graduating from Teleco Plains High School this year. Undoubtedly the most brilliant student I've ever had. Probably the most brilliant student's ever been at Teleco Plains High School. He made a 35 on the ACT. You know who I'm talking about. They knew I was talking about Joe at the beginning. But made a 35 on the ACT. 36 super score, by the way, on the ACT. Just a brilliant kid. And he's graduating. God's going to use him today. I think, by the way, he's headed for Tech. So he'll enjoy getting among you. Yeah, yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit farther. The fall of 2013, just last fall, my wife, Vicki, came to me and said, I got something I want to say to you, and I don't want you to interrupt me. Let me have my say. She has to say that. Because your first inclination is probably going to be to say no, but I want you to hear me out. I want you to listen. Don't interrupt. Don't say anything. Just pray. So she proceeded to tell me that she thought it was time for me to retire from teaching. I'm nearly 68, and she said, I think it's time for you to step down. Her reason really was she thought I was losing too much sleep, stressing out, you know, all this Common Core stuff coming on now. Everything's changing. I teach Algebra 2 and Physics and ACT Prep, but in the Algebra 2 especially, there were so many changes, so many changes. She said, you're losing too much sleep. You don't handle stress like you did when you were younger. She said, I think it's time for you to step down. For years, I have said to everybody who asked me, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to teach till I drop. And if I, you know, till my body wears out or my brain wears out, you know, I'm just going to keep going. And I think she's beginning to pick up that the brain's slipping quite a bit. And so she said, it's time for you to give it up. Now, the interesting thing was, it may have been the same day. It may have been within 24, 48 hours. I was praying about it. And the thought came to my mind, maybe I could export this Veritas Club to some other schools. Maybe. So I got thinking about that and praying about that and looking over the possibility. And I knew that one of the problems would be in a high school that very few high school students would be qualified or feel like they could possibly lead such a thing. You know, that the information is a little bit beyond them. They don't quite know this yet. So they wouldn't feel comfortable. Most of them wouldn't. There may be a few. And in most cases, even good Christian teachers don't feel comfortable. You know, they feel like, man, I'm going to have a lot of preparation to do. I don't have time to do all that preparation. And in most cases, some know some apologetics, though. And then, of course, you've got the problem in many schools where the teachers are told, even if it's before school, and even if it's voluntary, if it's not during school hours, even if it's voluntary, you can't participate. Teachers can be there. In fact, they're required to be there, but you can't participate. I've already heard that from teachers. So what I decided to do during Christmas break is start trying to make some YouTube videos of what we're doing in Veritas. It's basically PowerPoint presentations transferred to a movie maker and uploaded to YouTube. I narrate it. And I decided I needed to make them 10 minutes long, roughly. Not much longer than 10 minutes. Why? Not just attention span here. It's because in most schools, you're very blessed if you have more than 15, 20, 25 minutes for a club meeting. You just don't have much time. So I thought, if teachers don't feel like they can talk about it, they could say, hey, let's watch this video, and then after the video is over, we'll discuss the video. There's some places where I say, pause it and talk about this for a minute. I've got a long way to go on that, but so far I've got 11 of those uploaded on YouTube. And then I put together a little page, information page, for teachers to help them think about and pray about what we're doing in Veritas, what it would mean to sponsor a Veritas Club. And I put together another page to give to students so that students could get the idea and see the need. And then I began calling schools. What I do is call a school and say, you guys have a Christian club there? FCA maybe? Most schools have FCA. Could I ask who the sponsor is? When's the plan period? And I would try to get in touch with teachers and just gradually begin to talk to teachers, as many as I could. So far, in the past few months, I've talked to 30 teachers in about 14 different high schools, plus Hiawassee College. Talked to the dean of students down there. And so far, 7 schools are committed to having a Veritas Club next year. So I'm excited about that. Yeah, that's good news. That's good. And others are still praying. There are 4 others, I think, that are very, very close, but they just haven't made a commitment yet. And as we get the clubs lined up for this fall, what I'm hoping, you can help me pray about all this, but I'm hoping that some youth pastors will let me come into the churches and talk to the kids in churches and say, now listen, this is going to be happening in your school this fall. It needs to be on your radar screen. You need this. You need to show up. You need to support this thing. So maybe I'll get a chance to do some of that. So I'm just asking for your prayer support. Pray that teachers in different schools, as I talk to them, will see the need. Pray that they'll see the need and get involved and be willing to sponsor a club. The biggest factor, I believe, is going to be kids seeing the need. Because when kids are in high school, a lot of them just don't see it. If you say, you know, 70 to 80% of the kids drop out of church, they say, not me. I'm not going to. But of course, many of that 70 to 80% would have said the same thing. And so kids just don't see the big deal. They think, that's not going to happen to me. I don't need this. But they do. And a couple of years, they'll realize it. It would just be nice if they could get it into their system right now. Pray that I'll have time to finish the video project. I'll certainly have time, I think, in the fall. And we've got 11 of them up there, so that's enough to get us started. So pray that I'll finish that. Pray that I'll communicate with the right teachers. And what I've done, I don't know if I have enough for everybody or not. I think I do. But I'm going to ask my wife and Jared to pass those out. I've got 2 sheets for everybody. One that I give to teachers, one that I give to students. You can look it over. If you know a teacher, Share it with them. If you know a Christian teacher, ask them to think about praying about that, maybe in their school. And at the bottom of one of the pages, by the way, it tells how to find the YouTube videos if you want to check them out. I've got my cell phone number if you want to text me or call me. You know, you can. I'll be glad to talk with you about it, answer your questions. You got suggestions, ideas? I'm wide open, man. I need all the help I can get. And at this point in my life, I'm just praying that God will use me in some small way to help a few serious Christian students stay in the battle, you know, instead of flaking out. Stay in the battle. It's a war. We're in a war, and the stakes are high, and Christians need to be faithful and stay in the battle. Our kids need to. So help me pray. They're going to get hit with this sooner than they think, but thank you so much for your prayers. Thanks for being so attentive. And I guess I ought to ask if there are any questions before I sit down. Yes?
Are you going to retire?
I'm going to retire. Yes!
He listened to his wife.
This is it. Yeah, I listen to my wife. I usually do. She's wise. She's got a lot of good counsel. Thanks for asking. Yes, thanks. Anything else? Well, thank you guys. You've been very gracious.